We'd like to welcome everybody to the joint meeting of the Mesa City Council and the Planning and Zoning Board this Thursday, October 23rd, 2008. Madam Chair, Pat Esparza, welcome, and to members of the Planning and Zoning Board. Mr. Kavanaugh, probably just running late. And Board Member Beth Coons, due to a potential conflict, is in the audience, but not participating with us this morning.
And Board Member Dr. Salas is also absent.
Oh, okay. Dr. Ken Salas is at school. He has a written note from his parents, I hope.
I'm sure he does.
Okay. First of all, an agenda item. I picked up some frog in my throat, so the 20-minute soliloquy I had planned for later in the agenda will be cut down to 10 minutes. Okay, I'm sure you'll be happy with that. The reason for the joint meeting this morning is to hear a presentation and discuss and provide direction on the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan. As all will recall, this is a follow-up to a meeting we had back in June, I believe, the latter part of June. And since that time, staff and our consultants from HGR have worked diligently to, I guess the best way to describe it is to take the direction that was given and reframe both the approach and the specifics of how we're going to go forward with the Mesa Gateway Plan. What we have here, I believe, just from a cursory overview, is a significant, I don't want to say change, because it incorporates much of what we had in the original thing, but it takes a different approach, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say, because it appears that you put a lot of thought and study into what we're going to hear this morning. So with that, Mr. Wesley, I'll turn it over to you.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor, and Council and Planning and Zoning Board members. Good to have you here together this morning. I think the Mayor's given us a very good introduction to where we've been and where we're at. And to start with, I'm going to turn the time over to Mark McLaren from HDR, our primary consultant on this project, and he's going to go through a PowerPoint presentation that describes where we're at in this project and what we're looking for this morning. So, Mark, with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, John. Mayor, members of the Council, good morning. Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I, too, Mayor, have had an encounter with a frog this week, so hopefully my voice will hang in there as well, if you bear with me. What we would like to do this morning is kind of give you an update on where we are today in this process in the development of the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan, and talk to you about, most importantly, the document that's in front of you this morning and what that represents and how we've addressed the issues and concerns that have come forward from these two bodies as well as the stakeholders in this process over the last several months. When we last met with you jointly, there were several issues that were on the table that we had a lot of discussion about. There was the desire for this plan to provide a lot of flexibility to represent and understand the fact that land uses and things that occur in this area are apt to evolve over time. We need to provide flexibility for property owners and others to realize some of the opportunities that are near term while realizing long term opportunities as well. We needed to be less specific on land uses in certain areas of this plan and more define broader areas and the themes that could be accomplished and envisioned within each of those areas. There was a concern that in the direction that we were headed the last time that the plan was in fact becoming too prescriptive, and a desire that we kind of back away from that and giving landowners in the city more of the tools of the things that would help you realize the vision you have with this area without prescribing the exact steps that would be necessary on a parcel by parcel basis to accomplish that. And then lastly, there was a growing interest on the part of these two bodies as well as the stakeholders to take a much stronger position as it relates to identifying and addressing the issue of sustainability within the plan and the various aspects of sustainability that are important to the implementation of the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan. With that, we are here this morning to really address how we've resolved those concerns in three principal areas. The first is the revised goals and objectives for the Mesa Gateway Plan, to discuss the framework districts, those areas that we've identified and the themes that are important to each of them, and then finally the document that's in front of you this morning, which summarizes the vision and expectations for each of those districts and what those mean and how they'll be used in the future in the planning of the area. To our goals for this this plan. We have five goals that we have worked diligently with the stakeholders and others to really define. The objectives that go along with all of these goals are included within the document that's in front of you this morning. First and foremost, as we have done from the beginning, we are looking at how we capitalize on the expansion of the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, understanding its role as a key catalyst to the growth in jobs and opportunities within the city of Mesa and the Southeast Valley as a whole. We also focused on how we create a regional employment center, understanding that we want to focus on jobs that are and activities that attract knowledge-based workers and corporate executives, bringing a different type of job mix to the Southeast Valley. In doing so, we wanted to also have a development plan that has an intra and interconnected multimodal transportation system, understanding that we need to be addressing all modes of transportation and their roles within the different areas of this plan as it evolves so that we provide different choices for the different types of activities that would occur within the area on a daily basis. We wanted to become a model of sustainable development practices, and again, the draft document you have before you this morning includes a lot more in the discussion of sustainability, and we'll talk a little bit more about that this morning. And then finally, our goal of having a plan for implementation, what this means in terms of how this process continues to evolve and move forward for the city, as well as what it means for the property owners in the area and how they will participate in the realization of this vision that you have for the Mesa Gateway area. We've talked throughout this process about the rise of the airport city or the Aerotropolis and the fact that all of the components of a major city are starting to gather and develop more and more in areas around major airports because of the connectivity that those airports provide in logistics and commercial opportunity to global markets. And so as we've gone through this process, we've also been looking at how we make the airport a part of that important growth that's due to occur in the area. As we've talked throughout this process, there's also been a lot of interest and emphasis on the types of jobs that might be created within this area. And what I'd like to refer back to on the chart that you see in front of you, Mayor, at your economic breakfast earlier this summer, you talked about the distribution and the types of jobs that are currently within the city of Mesa and the high preponderance of retail-related jobs that are within the city of Mesa. What we've been trying to do as we go through this process and we look at the opportunities that can be gained with the catalyst in the airport and these large, vast areas of undeveloped land is creating an opportunity for other types of jobs to come in to change the mix within this area. So the bar that's on the right shows the forecast that we've worked on and what might be achieved in terms of the job type mix in this area through the year 2030. Again, with a focus on creating more than 100,000 jobs within this area, but changing the distribution, the types of jobs, to create more of the higher wage, high value jobs in the office and industrial sectors that provide long-term value to the city of Mesa. We've looked at the current economic trends in this area, again, focusing on specifically attracting the types of business that add value to this core concept of the Aerotropolis and what it means to the growth of the region. And as we've gone through the process, we've also worked with Elliott Pollock and Company to develop, as you've seen before, an economic development scorecard to really look at the types of industries where there is good opportunity within the market for that type of growth around the Mesa Gateway Airport and within the Mesa Gateway area so that the city has an understanding of where their investments are best made as they look at economic development opportunities and the types of industries that would be attracted to the area around the airport. We've also given a lot of consideration as we've gone through this process to the changes in housing demand, the changing demographics, and the fact that we have now generations, both younger and older, who are looking for different types of housing choices. The typical single-family house on a single-family lot with a swimming pool and a barbecue is not necessarily the choice of all home buyers. And so we've been looking at opportunities within this plan of how we can accommodate the different types of residential products that are becoming appealing to those different market types. We also have been considering and done a lot of work in the area of transportation modeling, taking the growth that's forecast for this area through 2030 and looking at the roadway networks and the transportation infrastructure that are necessary to allow people to move throughout the area on a daily basis for activities as they live, work, and play within this area, as well as if they're commuting into or out of this area. We want to maximize the efficiency of the transportation system that's there and implement it in such a way, again, that it's providing multimodal choices for the people who are within this area on a daily basis. And then finally, as we've gone through this process, we've also been developing what's referred to as a fiscal impact assessment model. This is a model developed by Fishkind and Associates out of Florida, which looks at all of the sources of revenue and expenses for the city over the next 20-25 years, and it provides a forecast to let the city departments understand what the fiscal impact is to the city of the different types of development that are apt to occur. So, for example, as the model looks at a certain type of commercial development, it will look at what that commercial development is going to place on demands for city services, city utilities, so that the city understands what the fiscal impact of that development is to the city itself. Similarly, it looks at the sales tax generation and things that come along with some of those uses to make sure that everyone understands the revenue opportunities that are there to help finance those improvements as well. And that's a model that we've been developing with a lot of input from your city budget staff so that it really responds to the very unique things in terms of financing and revenues for the city of Mesa and provides you a useful tool moving forward to consider new projects. As we've gone through all these steps and we've evaluated all of these things, there are a couple of key points and lessons learned that we want to keep in mind as we go through this discussion. First is we need a healthy house or healthy balance of jobs and housing within this area. We need mixed-use development in large part for the benefit of our transportation system as well because of the fact that it allows us to keep a lot of trips internalized to this area, reduce the amount of traffic that we put out into other neighborhoods and existing neighborhoods of the city of Mesa and the surrounding communities. By having fewer outside trips and having more uses within better mix of and balance of jobs and housing, it also allows us to have more opportunities for tax dollars to be spent within the city of Mesa. And of course, those dollars spent within the city of Mesa result in greater revenues in the fiscal impact assessment for you for those future improvements necessary to help this area grow. When we met with you last time, you'll recall that we discussed a multicolored map that got into very specific uses as we looked throughout this 32-square-mile area. And one of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the presentation was the need to not be so prescriptive and to back away to look at more at the themes and the ideas that would be accomplished within broader areas. The report that you have in front of you this morning outlines four framework districts that we have identified within the entire study area and addresses the way that each of those might be or the themes that each of those would take on as they continue to evolve and grow over time. To take you through each of those four just very quickly, the first district is the one that we refer to as the mixed-use community district. This is the district that is in the northeast quadrant of the study area, essentially. At the north side, it's against existing residential development in the city of Mesa. It has as its eastern boundary, the county line, and it has as its western boundary and southwestern boundary the freeway corridors of the 202 and the future 802 freeways. This is an area that we really envision as being the optimal in terms of the live, work, play community. It's the one that includes the Mesa Proving Grounds and the plans that have been brought forward to you by DMB for what they envision for that property. It's the one that we see as providing the greatest variety in terms of types of land uses while providing a walkable urban cores and centers of activity that are appealing to the different types of residents and residential opportunities that would be provided within that area and really provides a good mix of residential, commercial, civic, and employment opportunities within that area. The second district that we've identified is essentially the northwest quadrant of the study area. This is the area that we refer to as the inner loop district in that it is principally within the Loop 202 freeway area. This is an area that we, again, see a variety of uses, with employment probably being more prevalent in this area than in the mixed-use community, in part because of its proximity to the freeway, to Power Road, and the fact that it is an area which is going to have more sensitivity to the overflight activity from the Mesa Gateway Airport. And we'll talk about that a little bit as it relates to the standards that are provided within the district's vision and expectations document that's before you this morning. The third district is the Airport Campus District. This is essentially the area that is the Mesa Gateway Airport itself, as well as the ASU Polytech campus and some of the properties that are immediately around and adjacent to that. This is the district within which we really see the greatest opportunity to grow those two important catalysts for this area, first obviously being the airport and the second being the ASU campus itself, and the synergies that are created between those two uses and expanded opportunities for R&D and other things that might occur within that area. This is really becomes the hub of visitor activity to the area and really helps create a key part as a gateway, no pun intended, to this area and the vision that people have of what they expect and see as their first impression coming into Mesa and the Southeast Valley from this location. The final district we refer to as the Logistics and Commerce District. This is the district that is essentially on the southern boundary of the study area. It is an area within which we see, again, the greatest opportunity for industrial and business park type development, a lot of opportunity for larger building masses, warehouse type buildings that have the opportunity to take advantage of their proximity to the airport, to the freeway, and also to the railroad corridor that is down along the southwest corner of the study area. Again, in this district, as with all the districts, we also recognize and address within the document before you the need to respect and transition uses, to be sensitive to the uses that are across the boundaries of these districts. So in this case, on the southern edge, understanding the need to transition in such a way that we're respective of the development and the activities that are going on in Queen Creek just to the south of the study area. The document that's in front of you this morning is divided up into several sections. It covers the issues of sustainability, the vision and goals for the area. It defines each of the framework districts, and it talks about the building types that are important or that are envisioned within each of these four areas. It talks about the focus and form, or the way that development can be created, shaped, and integrated into the surrounding uses within each of these districts. It identifies, again, the goals, and specifically there's a lot of detail to the objectives that go along with each of these goals that we have spent a lot of time fleshing out with the stakeholders and other participants in this process. It talks about the character, providing illustrations of the type of architecture and urban design that the city and the stakeholders would like to see as a part of the development of this area, to really create not only a theme but a statement of the quality and the vision of what you would like to accomplish in this area over time. The standards for buildings, dealing with things like lighting and landscape, signage, other things relative to the types of buildings that could be seen in each of the four districts. And finally, providing illustrative examples for each of the districts in terms of the type of building design and the orientations of buildings to each other and how they function within a specific site. In the area of sustainability, we really talk about three key issues. The first is economic viability. We've talked since the beginning of this process of the need to, again, have a jobs housing balance to create the types of activities that create not only opportunity in terms of jobs, but also create revenue in terms of resources and sales tax opportunities for the city of Mesa to help fulfill the vision and provide this as an economically sustainable area, helping to support and grow itself. We also talk in this section about the response to context and location, talking about not only obviously our desert environment, but depending on the district you are in, for example, in the Inner Loop District, the need to be sensitive and address things such as noise compatibility and safety as it relates to the overflight activity of the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. And finally, within this section, we also talk about resource efficiency, the opportunity to use new technologies and techniques to help reduce our dependence on different natural resources and really create a more efficient environment within that area. There are specific examples that are provided for each of these in terms of what they mean, not only in terms of potential cost savings for development over time, but what they mean to our transportation system, to stormwater management, and what they also mean for things like air quality as we talk about the continued growth of our region and the challenge that we have in that area. In the district focus and form section, we talk about how the area is intended to function. What is the intensity of development to be seen within that area? And what are the connectivity issues as it relates to not only the land uses, but the relationships from a transportation perspective of how people get from one place to another? In the forum, we talk about the feel and the scale of development, and there are a lot of illustrations to provide those examples that are within the document that's before you this morning. We also provide some examples of the types of, or the character of the way that some of these areas might grow, and not only in terms of the types of buildings that could be envisioned within these districts, but how they might relate to each other and transition as you move through a district. And within those districts, then, we also provide standards, addressing issues such as typical building heights, floor area ratios, the types of uses that might be permitted or seen within the building types that are within that area, how we address circulation, how we address service, landscaping, lighting, and signage. A lot of the typical things that you find within your standards for development within the city, again, this time addressed in the broader context of how they would be accomplished within a district itself. Mentioned as we went through the outline, we also talk about design, providing specific examples of the types of buildings that would be envisioned within each of these districts, providing examples not only locally from here in the valley, examples from within the city of Mesa, the East Valley, and nationally as well, and providing good examples of, we think, the types of building that would provide the character and ultimately lead to the success of this area and in realizing your vision as we go through time. We talk about building relationships, again, looking at examples in an aerial format of how buildings have been designed to relate to each other in a cohesive manner so that each individual building that is constructed is not left as an independent project unto itself without a good relationship to the buildings that are around it. And within each of the four districts, we've provided examples of those. Within the document, you will also find examples of building types, not only small conceptual site plans to show different types of buildings and how we might achieve different levels of density, but also showing examples of those products that have been built in other areas, some within this area as well. Again, to give you, the city, to give your staff, to give property owners in this area an idea and a vision of what it is you'd like to accomplish as you continue to move forward in the realization of the growth of this area. And those examples that we provide not only include things like residential uses, but also include different types of mixed use opportunities. Again, looking at things like, in this case, the opportunity to take higher rise office development and include smaller retail as a part of it, and the relationship of what that means to the building, to the street around it, and how those uses work together. At this time, I'd like to turn this over to John to talk about the implementation strategy. John.
Mayor, Council, and P&Z board members, I'm going to spend a few minutes discussing with you how we might actually use the plan document to review a proposal that would come in, a site plan development in this area. I want to start, though, by acknowledging that once this plan's approved, it won't just sit on a shelf someplace. It'll be out there. It'll be in the public. We'll be working with economic development, so as they're dealing with different clients, different prospects in the area. They'll help by starting to direct them to the district in the area that would be most compatible with the type of use that they are looking for. We'll introduce them to the document so they'll be aware of the vision and goals, expectations we have for the area. So that will get us started with any projects that would come in. For this particular example, though, we have, we can switch to the Elmo. A conceptual site plan for a piece of property someplace in the inner loop area that, which one do I need to push? That one. In the inner loop area, someplace along Elliott Road. Not a specific property, and hopefully this will come up here in a minute. There we go. Down a little bit. So here's a site plan that's been submitted that has quite a variety of uses on it. It's got some office uses here on one side, 3 and 4 story. Got some office.
Exactly where is this?
Someplace along Elliott, okay. In the inner loop area.
Inside the inner loop.
Right. And then it's got some more office, retail, industrial uses proposed along the south end. It has some low-scale patio office type uses up here in this area. It has some multifamily standard apartment complex through the middle. Some pretty standard retail in this corner. And then some mixed office retail uses along this side. So it's got a good variety and mix of types of uses. It's a pretty large scale project. but how would we look at this in terms of this particular plan? We can start by turning to page 3 within the plan document itself, where we start talking about sustainability. Through these next several pages, we've got some of the things that Mark has already talked about with regard to sustainability measures. Within this section, there are a number of provisions that are fairly general, suggestions for things for us to, as a staff, to continue to work on to develop further guidelines and practices within the city. But also within there are some specific directions that we might use to look at specific developments. For example, in the section under noise, it talks about some noise level reductions that we would be trying to achieve with certain types of uses in certain areas. And so as the development would come in, we would work with the applicants on where they were at and how they might achieve those types of noise level reductions to make it a livable and livable type of place. Also under open space, first bullet under there, designing open space, it's individual open space elements of projects linked to those of adjacent projects. So we would be looking at site plans in context of those types of statements in that type of direction to see how we can accomplish those. Turning the page to page 4. There's some direction here, some suggestions with regard to solar intensity and temperature. The first bullet on the right column of that, use materials that minimize heat gain. And so we'll be working with the applicants to try to achieve those sustainability measures and those things and others that are scattered throughout this section on sustainability. From there, we'd move on to some of the specific issues in terms of the overall goals and vision for the area. If we turn to page 12 of your document, that's where we get into the overall for the total planning area, the vision and the different goals and objectives. I want to highlight again, as the mayor's mentioned before, in the last sentence of that first paragraph, it says it will be up to individual developers to demonstrate that their specific project is in alignment with and will further the implementation of these goals and objectives. So we're really looking to the developers, the applicants, to be familiar with this and to work to demonstrate that they are developing a project that will be consistent with our airport goals, consistent with our job goals and so forth that are in here, and that'll be a key element of review of these plans. So again, within these overall goals that have been set, the first one is capitalizing on the expansion of the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. We'll look at how this particular development is facilitating that or not, pointing to these specific guidelines, 1 and 2 under that area. And again, the developer will need to show that they are meeting those. In terms of job goals and job growth, it's mostly developing the type of environment that will attract those knowledge workers and those CEOs. So again, a couple of those on page 13, section 2.2, item 2.1, development of property will generate intensity that is typical of, that is of greater intensification than typical suburban development. When we look at this particular site plan that we have, we see a little bit of mix of that. We've got some things that look a little bit more urban, quite a bit of it looks still pretty suburban with large parking fields and so forth, so that might not really be consistent with what we're looking for here. 2.25, high quality design of buildings in the site plans. So we'd be looking at those building elevations and that we're getting that quality. Project design will be evaluated for the impact on street frontage and utilization of good street system. Again, this project does have that mix, but we're not sure maybe that has that overall street system being developed that we'd be looking for in this area. So again, we'd go through each of these goals, each of these overall concepts and evaluate the site plan based on that. Then from there, we can transition on down to the more specific standards that are provided within the document starting on page 26 for the Interloop District.
Councilmember Summers has a question.
John, throwing that back up for a second. We just approved with Mesa Proving Ground the idea of a site plan development potential statement. So utilizing this plan, how could this developer come forward with, say, a portion of that, I'm just maybe along Elliott Road, that they intend to develop today and build out the rest of this over time through a site plan development potential? Do we see that concept extending out beyond DMB's property to include this entire area?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, there are some ways that we can do that, and we do think that would be beneficial to try to get that understanding up front. Somebody has a large piece of property that they're maybe not ready to really develop all at the same time. Today, we could do that through having a conceptual site plan that accompanies the specific site plan that shows us how that might go, and utilizing a development master plan approach, DMP approach, where they would start to put in place those targets, those development potentials for the rest of the property, and again, that conceptual plan for how they want to use the rest of the property could be done at that early stage.
I think that was one of the positive directions that came out of the DMB proposal, is that site plan development potential, and something we ought to consider extending throughout that that region as well. That way it allows the property to start to develop up for today and then build out over time to increase those densities.
Well, it seems like also, I mean, at proving grounds, and like, for example, the project you have there, that tends to make sense because you have a single owner with a single large piece of property. But I think individual property owners who own smaller pieces, this is a change in thinking, because rather than take that piece of property and almost look at it in a vacuum, which is what we tend to do quite often as we look at the individual piece, it would appear that by our approach here, no matter how large or small the property is, you're really putting in the context of the overall district plan, and you're going to, if we're consistent with the application of this, it would seem like the result would be what Councilmember Summers is talking about, that once you decide on a use for one area, it will affect the district, because you're, once again, it falls into that overall context. Is that how you see it, or is that a little bit?
Yes, Mayor, that is how we're looking at it, with maybe one at least minor modification of that, and that is that we will really be focusing more on that form. And so we'll be working to set the buildings in the proper location, bringing them up the street, putting the parking where it belongs, to creating that more pedestrian type feel and scale. So the actual use maybe that ends up being in the building won't be quite as important, although it still will be part of that overall factor that we're looking at. But by setting up the proper locations and forms of the different structures, the uses can vary a little bit more.
Well, now, when you say that the use won't be important, however, we do have some sensitivities in this area that we don't have in other areas because of the airport.
Right.
And so, excuse me, and there are standards that we would have that I would assume would be different, for example, specifically, just cutting to the chase, residential versus non-residential, and how it relates to airport operations. We certainly would have to include that even within a form-based type of approach, the use as it relates to its effect on airport operations.
Right. That is correct. If I misspoke before, it's
well,
kind
I just
of secondary.
I think that's what you meant. I just want to clarify that.
It's still important. It's just a secondary importance.
Yeah, it may not only be important, it may be determinative.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we may have something that's in a sensitive area, and especially since we're in the inner loop, every piece of property in the inner loop is right off the bat sensitive because of past discussion and the realization that a large chunk of that is in a flight path. So somehow we have to keep that in mind, that as we move forward, the form obviously I think is important, and we agree that it's important, but also we need to take into account the effects that form and the use of that form may have on airport operations.
Right.
Do you have a comment, Councilmember Summers?
I think as an example of how we've done this in the past, although it's not been institutionalized, and Marty Dorito's piece at the 202 in Elliott is a pretty good example of how we took it when that project first came forward. If the PNC board remembers, typical strip mall, Target, Walmart, what have you, set out in ways we've done it in the past. And by washing that through this process, thinking about the type of development that we're looking for, the form that we're looking for, if you will, it was a matter of turning those buildings, adding some density, showing how this is going to develop 3, 4, 5-story buildings over time. And what you end up with is a pretty good conceptual plan of here's the development for today, and these are the other buildings that will fill in over time. And that was a really good example. I think the Farnsworth property we just approved the other day is fairly good example of that, where Mr. Farnsworth brought in a plumbing business, which should do smashingly well with all the development going to happen, but place that particular lease on a property that kept in mind, how am I going to use these other parcels that maybe are better for office and some residential uses. So those are two pretty good examples of how that's worked thus far.
Yes.
Mrs. Sparson.
Board Member Roberts.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question. We have a current set of pending cases that seem to remind me a little bit of the problems that you're discussing, where we've got two property owners in a zoned area that has the same zoning. And so you've got conflict between the property owners because we want to try to have something that blends together. Will this sort of plan exacerbate those sorts of situations? You know what I'm referring to?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Mayor, Board Member Roberts. I don't know that it will exacerbate that. I think we'll have more clear direction that we can use from this plan to help us deal with those situations. I think one of the things we've been struggling with in that particular case is that they are requesting the zoning at this time without specific site plans. And so we really don't know for sure what they are planning to do. If we would require the site plans to be submitted at the same time, that could help address those a little bit.
Yeah, but you will have somebody come in with a site plan, and then you'll have a smaller property owner and another smaller property owner, and what they do will dramatically impact what the other property owners are able to do.
Correct.
I can see that that's a process will, and it's not going to be fun to grow it. We're going to have to grow into that process, because, I mean, that's sort of what I was alluding to, is that we no longer can look at a piece of property, in a sense, as a standalone, because we have created a context and we have created an overall view, which I think will benefit and will help each property owner maximize the value of what they have. I mean, and that's the goal, is not to dictate all those. In some ways, it seems like that's what we're doing. But we're setting the stage. And it's a change. It's a big change. And I can see that being extremely challenging until we develop sort of get through a first few cases or several cases and try and figure out how that framework best, where we balance out the goals and objectives of the overall area and the specific district with, you know, property rights. And I can see that how we implement that is going to be very, very important certainly in the early stages, but as we go along, I think we'll get more comfortable with how that works.
Mayor, I agree wholeheartedly with that, and would also comment that you know, compared to where we've been with a zoning ordinance that's very prescriptive about what you will do, you can very easily look at that and say, I'm going to have this setback and do this on the property, as opposed to maybe these more flexible goals with that big picture direction.
Right.
It will take a lot more staff and applicant working together to move towards this. So it'll be, particularly up front, probably a lot more labor intensive to get those first few projects designed and out there so we can see how it's going to work and have that get that ball rolling. But we'll still be with that negotiation that will go on because we've allowed that flexibility. We'll be staff intensive.
Well, one thing that I've experienced is that as I've had property owners and representatives come in is, as far as you relating to that communication, is the understanding that the way we've done things in the past, where really the challenge has been property owner and government are really negotiating over what I can do on this property, and it's very adversarial. By setting out this new way of doing things, we're actually trying to establish a standard, a baseline, and then allow the property owner the flexibility to go up.
Right.
I found that's in an interesting way, trying to explain to the property owner, no, we want to give you more flexibility to do this, and they're arguing with me that because they're used to doing it the other way, and they think we're trying to create prescriptions on their property. And I can see a real educational challenge as we move through this to get property owners to understand that we're actually trying to give them more flexibility. We're actually trying to give them more ways to do things. And so there's going to be an initial reluctance to come in and say, I want a zoning. I don't have a site plan for us to say, no, you can't do that. Or if you're going to do that, there's going to be these stipulations. That's not an attempt to restrict what they do, but to set the stage to provide something they can even do more with it. And that's what I hope we're trying to get to.
Right.
Mr. Roberts?
Can I ask another one? Will there be, maybe I should know because I've been working on the modules for the new zoning ordinance, but and I really like the form-based approach, don't get me wrong, but will there be percentages, for instance, of residential in these districts, percentages of commercial? There will be no percentages against which someone would consume that percentage and then relegate the other owners to other uses.
Mayor, Councilmember Roberts, no, we are not proposing anything like that.
Great.
Mr. Meisner.
Thank you, Mayor. That leads to a question I had, and that is the effect of this new type of zoning, form-based zoning, on already zoned properties. We have a lot of projects down in this area that have already been through planning and zoning and city council and maybe even design review board. In effect, barring economic conditions, they could apply for building permits tomorrow. So are we going to renegotiate those site plans, or are they subject to some kind of new criteria even though they've been through our regulatory process?
Mayor, board member Meisner, you know, the existing zoned property will present somewhat of a challenge. They've gotten partway through that entitlement process, and they have some rights by already being zoned. If they don't have a site plan already approved, we are somewhat limited in how far we might be able to take that to address the various goals and expectations we do have at this time. But hopefully, because what we are doing, as the mayor has pointed out, is really loosening things up and should be giving the property owners more options and more creative ways to use the property, they will be drawn to want to take advantage of the new directions and apply them to the properties. We do have large segments of that property, though, that area that aren't zoned yet. So a lot of it's still even in the county. And so we do have a lot of potential left there yet to bring those in, work with them right from the beginning, and get the greater parts of those areas going in the direction. Again, I think everything else will want to follow suit because this is such a positive direction.
And Mayor, second question, if I may. There are some goals and some philosophies in here that will impact our infrastructure-related departments. For example, the reuse of stormwater, different kinds of street patterns, the emphasis on green buildings. Are we looking at changing some of our infrastructure standards and some of our development criteria to reflect those goals? Because it's different than what we've done in the past.
Mayor, Board Member Meisner, we've had representatives from other departments involved in our discussions on the plan, so they're aware of these things coming. We've also, as we've worked through the DMB proposal, we've faced a lot of these challenges there already and begun to think about how we might incorporate different ways of doing business on that property. I think we'll be able to translate that into the larger area.
I think some of those goals are great. I was particularly struck by the reuse of stormwater. Typically, our goal is to get rid of it as quickly as possible, and you know, we ought to be reusing that just like we could at our homes. So. I think that's a good goal. One last point, Mayor, if I might.
Go ahead.
I'm real big on maps, and I found as I went through this document, I really needed a map to show the boundaries of the area with some streets so we know where we're talking about. I mean, you've kind of got the sub-areas delineated, but in the final document, if we could have a map showing the area and some of the landmarks and things, just good for reference. So.
I guess just in relation to that, this is one piece of what will be a bigger plan document that will contain some other information.
Thank you.
I can think the thing with the big lines, that's an airport.
Well, I got that part.
Next time we'll put labels on, okay? I just wanted to, and this is the dilemma, to make sure everyone understands. You talked about loosening up. I want to make sure we understand that, in a sense, we are loosening up. But the trade-off and something we're willing to do as a city is while we loosen up on the upside, we are establishing some very well-defined basic standards. So this is not a free-for-all. I don't want anyone to believe that somehow we're just opening the gate and letting everything run wild. We believe that if we set the proper standards, if we establish the foundation, that you know private creativity and money and investment can do some wonderful things when they're loosened of the restraints headed upward. Mm-hmm. But we need to once again take into account that our basic mission as government is to create that framework and to protect, you know, public safety and the other basic things that are important. So I have a problem in explaining how that really works, but I think people would understand as they go through that. For example, the rezone, there are some properties in there that are hard zoned. I would hope that they can find that they can probably do better if they integrate themselves into this process. And I hope that that's the result. And I think that that's certainly our objective, that they can actually do better. And so it's an enhancement to their property rather than a further restriction on their property. And then they would voluntarily come in and become part of this process. Now, once again, getting there is going to be a little bit challenging because this is such a change, a big change, a good change. But we need to understand that that's what we're trying to accomplish. It's not just a free-for-all. Councilmember Richens.
I bet you have some kind of a strategy to bring us the changes that have to happen, and just basic things like the setbacks and the design standards that are embedded in our code now that help us change. You want to talk a little about your implementation strategy?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, yes, I would, but I would maybe like to finish going through this example first, and that come back to that at the end, if that's okay. All right. So we've gotten to the point of actually looking at this plan in context of the inner loop and what the inner loop area is really suggesting for this particular area. And so starting on page 26 of the document, we look through the inner loop area and its recommendations. And so as we've talked about before, the first section talks about the focus. What are we trying to accomplish in this area? And it suggests that this area is intended to be a medium intensity employment area. That's its primary function. We expect it to have a more comprehensive mix of live, work, play, but the emphasis is on the work. And the live part should be pretty integrated multifamily type situations if it's going to occur. We're also looking at the Elliott Road corridor as a transit corridor that's linking the high activity areas over on Ellsworth and Elliott on over to the Power Road corridor. And so we're looking at some village center type development to occur along that particular corridor. We look at the form. We see that it talks a lot about in that first paragraph that the form must be sensitive to the fact that it has the airport activity. That the form must provide for significant sound attenuation, and any outdoor activities need to be designed in light of that outdoor or that noise type activity. So when we look at again, particularly the residential use here, that looks to be a pretty typical suburban apartment complex with the outdoor pools and walking areas and so forth, that may not really be appropriate in this location. We certainly be one of the things we'd look very closely at in this plan. It also talks about the form needs to have that village form. And so as we look at these, we see some things like that. This block in here with the retail office kind of has that form to it, but a lot of the rest of it doesn't. It's still pretty suburban in nature. So those would be things we'd want to work at on this. Again, in that second paragraph, it talks about the importance, says that any residential uses must demonstrate that their ability to address the impacts of aircraft operations and not limit the continued development of the airport. So if that residential is going to happen, it's on the developer's list that they've got to prove how the design's going to work for that. We'd go through the goals as they more specifically apply to this area. Again, goal one about the airport reemphasizes those same objectives of making sure whatever the development is compatible with the airport. We're looking for a variety of employment options in this area. We look at this particular plan and we see that. We see retail, we see office, we see industrial being incorporated. So this plan's doing a good job of trying to meet that. Sustainability, we're looking for that greater density and intensity of uses. We're looking for integration of uses so we can cut automobile trips. This plan's kind of mixed on that. It's heading that direction, but again, we've got some large expanses of buildings that are not associated with each other, a lot of parking along streets, so we would want to take a closer look at that. Turning to page 28, we get into those standards that we've mentioned before. So it tells us that typically, if we're looking at a commercial-type building, we're wanting one- and two-story. If we've got a mixed-use building, 2 to 8 stories. If it's a business park, the 3 to 6, so we'll be looking at this. We know that this area can have quite a wide variety of uses. It can have those more intense village cores. It can have the more typical industrial type uses. So we've got a pretty wide range of floor area ratios. The 0.35, typical suburban development today is someplace about 0.25, 0.27. So even at our low end, we're looking at that little bit increased density, something a little bit more intense in our standard suburban. But it's what we typically see in these more industrial type areas at 0.35. But when we get to those village core areas, we'd be looking at the higher end floor area ratios. It emphasizes the typical uses in this area can be the commercial business park and light industrial. So we'd look at these again and compare what we've got to those. The block character in that next paragraph talks about in those more village type core areas, we'd be looking for smaller blocks, things more pedestrian oriented. Again, this area over on the east side starts to get there. A lot of it though has larger blocks. But we recognize also as we get away from those village cores, larger blocks are probably all right. So some recreation of this area so it creates more of those smaller blocks are probably more consistent. And then finally, looking at the different design characters here we'd use as we would look at the architecture of the buildings. So in response to looking at those different ideas, we'll put together a revised quick site plan that we might try to suggest and work towards the applicant to bring back something more along this line that creates this village center in the area with something towards the middle here that provides some focus for that. All these main streets in here are much more pedestrian-oriented, has more intensity, would be more beneficial towards transit-type uses and a variety of circulation methods, but still keeps some of those more industrial-type areas as a part of the overall development. So again, it's just a quick sketch concept of what might be more acceptable, incorporate many of the same uses previously proposed. This is the type of direction we try to steer the developer in response to this particular district. Questions?
Any questions? Mr. Carter.
Mr. Wesley, we have a general plan in place right now. How will this interrelate with that general plan? Because the goals done on the general plan 5-6 years ago aren't necessarily the goals that this is putting forth.
Mayor, Board Member Carter, this gets back pretty close to Councilmember Richin's question. How are we going to tie this into the existing general plan designations, this existing zoning categories that we have, and where are we with the zoning code update and those things? That is a next level of effort that staff's starting to work on and consider. We are anticipating a couple of ways we can approach that. One is going to be to adjust the definition of what's a major general plan amendment in this area, so that more things can be minor plan amendments if they're going to move in the direction of the plan. We may, as a city, want to sponsor a major plan amendment ourselves to apply some new land use categories in this area in the coming year. We may look at, are there some other mixed-use land use designations similar to the mixed-use community that we might want to create as a general designation so that it opens it up and makes it easier then to start developing in this more mixed fashion than our existing land use designations provide for. And certainly as we're looking at the zoning code and we're anticipating a form-based section in that so that we can have the opportunity to take this more form-based approach to the actual zoning designations and development processes throughout this area. Those are steps that we'll be working on in the next months to come, to be bringing back to council, PNZ board and council for approvals.
And once again, I would hope that we would create an environment where in the interim or until we get completion one of those, that the property owner would find it to their advantage to gravitate toward the new plan and would initiate that process themselves, recognizing the benefits of getting up there, which is a new concept, I believe, where we're actually providing certain types of I hate to use words incentives because that gets mistaken, but in a sense process incentives, mm-hmm. and where we're actually encouraging them to get into the process because they benefit more. And if they benefit, then we win a lot more. So I'm hoping that as we transition, that's certainly the sentiment and that we create that kind of framework where that actually happens.
Sure. Right now, Mayor, we have tools in place that we can pretty much do these things, but they take kind of pulling some pieces together and using them in unique ways, a little bit awkward. Yeah. And what we want to do is get it to where doing what's in this plan is the easiest thing in the world to do. And it's just right there laid out for you to do. And that's what we'll be working on, again, in the next couple of months, is what are those things we need to do to accomplish that.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor. Mr. Wesley, question on just your standards, signage, lighting. Weren't we talking about being more flexible with design standards to not meet just the basic city standards, depending on, you know, like the page on page 29, I don't think those lights that are shown would meet city standards today. So is that something we're going to look at individually, see if the lighting matches the new style of the building?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, that's correct. That's what we want to do, is to be able to allow that variety of lighting depending upon the type of area that's being created.
Good question. Yeah.
Councilmember Summers?
Good question, because it says standards on it.
I keep forgetting to do that. John, looking at the Logistics and Commerce District to the south, under focus, I'm sorry, this is on page 40 for those who want to follow along. And I'm going to flip around, so I'll call out some page numbers. Page 40 on the logistics section mentions the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, specifically up on the top left side, said this district shall provide a high quality employment environment as compatible with increasing overflight activities associated with the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. It goes on to talk about the flight and overpath. When I flip back to page 26, we get back to this interloop district. We start here talking about mixed-use areas, residential uses, live, work, play, high-density residential uses. Also on the left side below the picture, it talks about medium to high-density residential uses and residential not being excluded from this area. One of the exercises we went through in a joint P&Z meeting and council meeting was the ASU Decision Theater. It demonstrated the overflight from how the airport operations are actually happening. And one of the more compelling visuals that was used was the noise underneath the departure and arrival routes, particularly on the departure side to the north side, in which we were hitting with the MD-80 aircraft, 85 decibels, and that was concentrated, much of that noise was concentrated under this district. So I guess the question I have is, if the Logistics and Commerce Center is part of that overflight area and increasing overflight area, and so has been designated as an industrial and job center because of its overflight proximity to the airport, how is the interloop, which has also been demonstrated to have high noise levels because of the overflight and the takeoff and departure routes, how is that suddenly okay to put in residential in a live-work plan? I'm quoting, to establish a live-work plan environment. I don't understand the difference between airport noise to the north and airport noise to the south. And as you answer that, too, I would also bring up that the plan executed by the Urban Land Institute, which really helped trigger all this discussion that we're having right now, has a map on one of its pages. Here it is, on page 28, if you want to throw it up on Elmo, perhaps. Might throw that down. That has this area as largely designated, or recommends that this area be largely designated as industrial. So given what the Urban Land Institute experts have said, given what I have brought up, given what we have learned with the visuals and the noise demonstrations from ASU, how do we justify a live-work-play environment in the Interloop District?
Okay, Mayor.
Pithy is not one of my strengths.
Councilmember Summers, I think there are a variety of differences here that we're looking at, and certainly, as we've mentioned, we understand that in the Interloop area, any residential that would occur will have to be done carefully and will have to be done appropriately to address those sound issues and the aircraft overflights. As we start looking at the area, there are some basic differences between the Interloop area and the Logistics Commerce area. In the Logistics Commerce area, in addition to the overflights from the standard takeoff landing, we have the helicopter flight paths that have come across there. We've made a commitment to those, which expand the area beyond just those basic noise contours. We also have existing large industries in the area that have their own impacts and need to be protected from the residential uses, because those wouldn't be compatible with those large industries either. And so from that, we've made the commitment to making that the place where we would have those larger warehouse uses, the truck traffic, the those variety of uses that, in addition to the airport, will make residential even more difficult. I think we've said early on someplace in the basic goals that we're not necessarily excluding any use from any place if it can be done and meet the goals of the plan. So there is some potential out there, although it's probably a little bit remote, for residential occur even in the Logistics Commerce area. But when we move to the north side into the inner loop area, we are transitioning at that point. We do have existing residential to the north. We're planning it to the east. We do know that there are the flight path issues to deal with, and certainly we may continue to maintain that protecting and enhancing the airport's the first goal, and anything that's done has to make sure it's not impeding that growth and development. But as air operations continue to evolve over time, planes get quieter and so forth, we think there is the possibility for that residential to occur. Maybe we've overstated a little bit. Maybe some better ways we can state it for that inner loop area, because certainly we want to make sure it's clear that air operations is the first goal.
I think those are fairly compelling arguments to be made. My concern with the plan as it's currently written, as I have under the focus, I really don't like the first two paragraphs. One, on page 41, if you want to flip through again, there's a very good line that I think we ought to be replicating. And that's the one I read out, that this district should provide a high-quality employment environment that is compatible with increasing overflight activities associated with Mesa Gateway Airport. I would make an important distinction in that instead of utilizing employment, that we put that this district should provide a high-quality mixed-use environment, and then the rest of that to work as well. I also think that it's important, too, that we say if under form on page 26 again, on the right-hand side, about four or five lines down, I'm a little concerned where it says medium to high-density residential, because as we currently define it, medium-density residential is the house I'm living in right now, and that sucker isn't going to fly, and I did mean the pun there. Also below that, two lines, while residential uses are not excluded from the area, I think it would be better stated. Actually, I like that line overall, but I think it would be better stated if residential is approved in this district, such uses must demonstrate their ability to address the impacts of aircraft operations and not limited development and expansion of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. You think that language is a little more cautionary and understands that the airport, I mean, the airport on this goal is number one. That was our number one issue, is the development of that airport, and we all recognize its importance to it. When we talk about synergy with some of the projects that are coming through right now, and that airport is an important key component of that, and it has to weigh heavily given the fact of the overflights. By the way, do we have that map of the overflights with the noise? And also, I think appropriate residential projects, we might want to discuss what some of those look like. The pictures in this, I really like, because I think that when you look at the visuals that you've included, I think we're absolutely on the right track there. But we can put in the language too when at the back of the book. We look at some uses that might work, such as low-rise multifamily over retail mixed use. I think that is what you were aiming for in that redesigned site plan from the hypothetical map that we looked at earlier, or retail on ground floor or high-rise multifamily. It has that Tempe Town Lake flavor that we had discussed previously and seems to fit more in the area if we're going to allow some kind of residential here. But again, I think given the noise north and south of the airport, it's still noise, and it's a lot of noise, and it's going to see increasing. So I'm a little concerned with that language here and would recommend that these changes be made, and I would be happy to forward those to you so you have them.
Great. Thank you.
Just to comment on what Councilmember Summers said, he and I don't disagree at all over the objectives, and we've had a lot of discussions on this. However, I would like to caution us that I think this is a self-regulating process, and I think that in every section, we can't overemphasize the fact that the goal number one is to maximize the potential of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, and therefore, if we undertake a process which keeps that as the number one goal, we should not be putting residential where residential doesn't work, residential doesn't fit, where the conflict is such that we choose any type of development, and since we're talking residential, especially residential, over the airport operations. And I'm hoping that in the overall framework that we're providing, that the specific process regulates that, rather than, once again, coming down and in the framework, somehow trying to accomplish what should be accomplished in the process. I would be really disappointed if, as the overall goal, we state to maximize the airport operations, which is the economic driver in this area. We all agree on that. And somehow we choose any type of development, and specifically residential, that inhibits the ability of the airport to either operate as it currently operates or to grow, then we've certainly failed. And we've actually gone against what I believe this specifically states. So, you know, I 100% agree with what Councilmember Summers is saying as far as being very, very careful. I know it's a touchy subject. This is a deviation to even mention residential in the Interloop area from what others previously had stated. I think that I believe it's a mistake to draw lines and create a black and white issue. I don't believe this is a black and white issue. I know that's the easiest approach, but I believe there are consequences that we don't want to go to, which is that by taking a prescriptive approach to certain things, we ensure that nothing happens. And I don't think that is fair to either the community as a whole, certainly not fair to the property owners. I think this balance that we're trying to achieve is a good approach. I also believe that the process better makes sure that our number one goal is always realized, which is we don't kill the economic driver, which means that regardless of where we are, we look at the use and see how it impacts the airport operations. And airport operations, it goes beyond noise in my mind. It does go beyond helicopter flight paths, which aren't that noisy. Even if we had 757s, I was literally eating with my kids across the street from the airport the other day, did not hear the plane take off, so quiet. That still wouldn't change my ideas to what kind of uses are reasonable off the end of an airport runway. Even though you couldn't hear it, I would never advocate residences off the end of right underneath a flight path. I don't think that's the right thing to do. So I hope we keep that in mind, and as we develop this specific process, that it's a pretty high standard. It's a very high standard. It takes into account things in addition to noise, because there are things that might be more important, safety and other things that would inhibit airport operations. Let's go to the Vice Mayor and then to Mr. Carter.
Part of what we're looking at here, too, when you talk about the helicopter flights, those are not just a matter of noise or visual. It is, they have specific guidelines from the federal government of where they can fly and what's underneath them when they fly. How are we addressing that to assure those corridors are protected?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, with that, what we have committed to before is that area south of Williams Field Road to the east has been designated for that helicopter path, and we've maintained that by keeping that in the industrial commercial area, no residential.
So being very, very specific, because we know that under those federal guidelines, it's not a maybe, it is definite.
Correct.
All right.
Mr. Carter?
Okay, in regards to this issue, it seems to me that it would be unwise to, like you were saying, Mayor, of totally restricting it, because there's so many products out there in the development world that can minimize acoustic problems. You can use acoustic glass, different kinds of insulation throughout a building. And it would seem prudent that as we move decades down the road, that Mesa's going to have to go up in many areas. And so why should we restrict a particular use that might work in that? What I think might happen, this might benefit, is a sub-chapter on how to some of the opportunities that might be in a list form or in a verbiage on acoustic mitigation, on what you would expect as staff to say, okay, if you're in this area, these are some of the minimums. You know, you're going to have acoustic glass in here. You're going to do this. You're going to have a decibel level of X using your materials. You must demonstrate this, you know, in order to get what you want on there. And that might help with some of the problems that...
I think that, and I see where you're going, I think that as we develop these standards, what we might need to do, since this seems to be the linchpin issue. I mean, there's a lot of projects that I think that'll live or die over this one issue, which is how does it affect airport operations? And it seems like we're going to have to get more detailed and more specific, not only to sound, but as the Vice Mayor mentioned, to things such as flight paths and that have nothing to do with sound but have to do with use and the type, you know, Boeing and their experimental aircraft, things like that, we're probably going to need to develop some substandards that get more specific, because this is going to be in many cases, the make or break for a lot of projects, specifically when we're talking about residential, non-residential. So, Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I want to voice my agreement with Councilmember Summers on the word medium on page 26, because the medium housing, no matter what the sound is, continuations of the house, we still have a backyard with a pool and a barbecue, because we're talking the Superstition Springs area is a medium density, like Councilmember Summers said. So that word medium does kind of concern me, because we're not going to make a quiet backyard.
Well, let's make sure before this group gets arguing over specific words, because I'm not sure that's what Mr. Wesley envisioned was that kind of development. So perhaps we're talking semantics here, and which I think will work itself out. And maybe we need to, since there is some differences of opinions, what that means we probably have a problem.
Right.
So let's change that to get more descriptive as to exactly the type of housing you're envisioning, because I don't believe that correct me if I'm wrong, whether the staff is envisioning backyards with barbecues in this area. Okay. Councilmember Summers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mayor. I was going to say, before we get into wordsmithing, I think what might be best, if I give you this language, we can disseminate that out and then have that conversation. Because from what I'm hearing, I don't think we're really on different pages here. I think we're pretty much on the same page. Also, to the board member's point, page 3 has some issues on noise and decreasing of the thing. So that was, I think that's...
Yeah, and I think, once again, the devil will be in the details as to, since we've put the burden onto the developer to basically show that they've met these standards, that as they come in and we develop those applications, checklists, whatever we do, that there will be some specific things that I'm sure you'll have them ask for, and will present us with specific cases to see whether they conform with that overall goal, that number one goal of the airport, or not.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that. Councilmember Fenter, and then Mr. Carter.
Thank you. Just briefly, I'd like to get more information. Under our goals, it says number 3, establish an intra and interconnected multimodal transportation system. And then looking at specifically logistics and commerce district, my concern is that rail corridor. I've always been under the understanding that is a vital part of future development, trade-free zone. Some of those, I'd like to better understand, and hopefully we don't miss the boat on somehow making sure whatever development allows, is it spurs, is it some sort of access to that rail? Maybe someday that's a commuter rail system. Should we be thinking that somehow, you know, the system goes through the heart of Gateway? Just more questions, but I'd like to see before we, you know, see somehow that gets included. Thanks, Mayor.
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Wesley, how is this document going to be amended in future years? As we see in a current project that's running through P&Z, the general plan says one thing, and we're finding that doesn't really work anymore right there. Some of that could happen in here also. How is this going to be amended, say 10 years from now?
Mayor, Council Member, or Board Member Carter, that's a good question that we haven't specifically discussed. We're still trying to get it adopted. But certainly there are several ways in which we will be looking at doing that. First of all, as I mentioned before, as we look for new land use categories that might need to be created and implemented in the area to help implement the plan, once those are done, modifying those over time might be a way that we would do that. As we update the general plan itself here in a few years, we'll have that opportunity to incorporate all the sub-area plan ideas and concepts into the overall general plan. So it'll give us a time then a couple of years from now when we'll be looking back at this plan and how we incorporate it. Are there any modifications within the matter of the next couple of years? Just as we update general plans periodically, every 10 years at least, we can come back and do the same thing with the sub-area plan, so that gives us another opportunity to come back and look at this plan and look at modifications that are needed to respond to changes in conditions.
So it would go through the same process like we're doing right now?
Certainly a similar process anyway of public review and comment adoption by council.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions?
Let me tag on to that because I want to say that as a practitioner on this, this is a great document because I can look in here and I can see your specific goals of what we're trying to do. I see pictures that tells me I have to perform at a certain level to achieve this goal that you've got. I think it's great, and I haven't ever seen it before. It's probably out there, but where you've designated on a map where these things are as real living areas with buildings that have actually been done that a developer can look at and say, okay, I can relate to that. This will work for this area. I think it's a great document, even though we got little devils in the details that'll happen. But overall, I think it's a great piece of work.
Thank you.
Mr. Wesley?
Mayor, actually, I'm going to turn it back to Mark, who's going to finalize with kind of our schedule from here to bring this plan back.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Just real quickly, over the coming weeks, we have a schedule of continued public dialogue as well as continuing conversation in review action by both Planning and Zoning Board as well as by the City Council. We have a public meeting that's been scheduled in the study area for the evening of October the 29th. At the Fire Station Community Room where we have met in the past with residents of the area. Mr. Wesley will be presenting this document to the Design Review Board on November the 5th, and then we will be returning to the Planning and Zoning Board with a request for approval of this effort on November the 20th, following with council action on December the 1st. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? I would like to thank Mark and John and all the staff for all the hard work that has gone into this, and the stakeholders, too. I understand from getting a lot of comments that they have been involved in the process, and I think at least the feedback I've gotten that they're very happy with the way things are going and believe it provides them ample opportunity to succeed on their properties and conform with what we as a community really want to do, which is to create this type of economic center focused on the airport and on its potential, which creates, I think, a win-win type situation. I'd like to thank the Planning and Zoning Board. Thank you for meeting with us this day and adding your questions and comments. Really appreciate that. And at that time, do you want to go on your merry way? You may.
We will. Thank you, Mayor. Any other questions, comments from our board members? No? All right. Thank
Madam
you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yeah, so we're adjourning the joint meeting. Do I have a do I need a motion? So moved. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Adjourned the joint meeting.
Reconvene a study session.
Reconvene our city council study session.
Thank you. It's a long agenda.
Well, we're repositioning here. Council here reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Do we have any reports? Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to comment that last night a number of us were able to attend a celebration at the Mesa Arts Center for the Banner Desert Medical Center, which is celebrating its 35th anniversary at its current location. And I think we saw a wonderful example of an institution that has been engaged in a positive way in its community for many years and has offered excellent health care to our residents and has exciting developments along the way with its new children's hospital. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other? Vice Mayor?
Also yesterday, besides the celebration last night, which was very nice, I had the privilege of speaking to Valley Forward along with Mayor Hugh Hallman and Tom Simplot from Phoenix on light rail. Just a reminder to everybody, the celebration's coming up. We have Councilmember Kavanaugh's hosting, I believe, the November 22nd celebration at our end-of-line station. But when we have the big celebration on December 27th, starting that, there will be free use of the light rail, not just on that weekend, but it will go through the end of the year, through New Year's Eve, so that we get into the work week where people who will normally be our users of that service will get used to the work week use of it. So take the opportunity to go ride the light rail for free. beginning December 27th through the end of the year.
Thank you. Any other reports? Mr. Brady, scheduled meetings.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, this afternoon at 3:45, we'll have the ribbon cutting for the new crime lab. And that will be at 133 North Morris, and it's right behind the parking garage of, or west of the parking garage of the of police headquarters. So invite everyone to be there at 3:45. The public is invited to come to the grand opening today between 4 and 8 p.m. So it's open for the public to tour the facility. And then this Saturday, October 25th, we'll have our City Hall at the Mall. We'll be at Superstition Springs, and the city staff will be there from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Councilmember Summers.
Sorry, I zoned out. Did we talk about the open house on the 7th for, what was that date, 29th, for this plan at Station 217? What was the date?
That was the 29th, I believe.
29th. Is that right? 29th, there's Station 217, 6 p.m. to 7:30, 10434 East Baseline Road, Signal Butte, Meridian.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, do you have any requests to speak from citizens?
No requests, ma'am.
There being none, I'll entertain a motion to enter into executive session.
So moved.
Second.
By the Vice Mayor, second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are now in executive session.